I've been reflecting, maybe like many of you, a lot the last few weeks on themes related to Thanksgiving, related to generosity and gratitude. And I don't know, perhaps even the speaker last time may have talked about those themes. I don't know. Was that the case? No. I'm grateful. And I can speak more about that. I was also very inspired by Art's reflecting on that very beautiful impulse that we call generosity. So I want to explore some on generosity, but mostly on the theme of gratitude, and understand both of these as practices that we can cultivate. My hope is that in the next week, you'll want to practice one of these, two or perhaps both of them, and take them as guides for the next week for what you're doing. And I'll be talking about a few ways to practice, particularly with gratitude. And they go together very much. And we know, we've probably heard much about dana, in the Buddhist tradition, the theme of giving, of offering, very fundamental practice. And it's, of course, the way that we are guided in terms of our of the economics of our communities. But more basically, generosity is a fundamental quality that is developed. It's ultimately generosity of our spirits, of our lives, of how we are, the sense of our lives being there for others, and of course not excluding ourselves. Actually, one way that we might practice generosity, which would be somewhat distorted, would be to give to others but not take care of ourselves. And so both of these qualities, generosity and gratitude, are practices that we can cultivate in various ways through our intentions and through specific activities. And in that process, there's learning. In that process, we see, where am I tight? Where do I not want to give? Again, whether it's in terms of our energy with others, or could be towards ourselves. Yes, I feel really comfortable. This is happens for many of us who are in the helping professions. I'm very comfortable at being very generous with others, but am I generous with myself? And so, like all practices, there are going to be certain ways that we can get a little bit confused or distorted, or that the quality doesn't come through clearly. And a lot of what we find when we practice is what gets in the way, or what's a distorted version of generosity or gratitude, that we will find those qualities as we practice. And in the ancient text, there's a lot about generosity. I think many of you know that generosity is the first of the paramis, or the perfections, to be developed. Paramis are 10 in number, and it's a teaching that, in fact, most practitioners in Asia would receive first, that they actually practice the paramis, particularly generosity, before they get to meditation. For us, we practice meditation first, and generosity becomes an advanced practice. It's the reverse of what you find in Asia. And there, one would learn generosity, much like much as in the daily practice that many of you know, where monks and nuns might go on alms rounds, like in Thailand or Burma nowadays, and they would go at dawn silently and receive food from villagers. And the villagers would often have the little children there to give a spoonful of food to a monk or nun, as a way of learning dana at the age of 3, right? And it'd be that sense of, we want to offer, and we're offering in support of these ones who also help us. And virtually all of the monasteries are right next to villages. And when I've stayed at monasteries in Thailand, the villagers would come on the weekends and they would talk to the monks or nuns, and there'd be some kind of counseling, some kind of real give and take. And so all of this sense of generosity is very much in a world which is very much, as in the native phrase, the gift that keeps moving. That one is in a pattern, one is in a system of giving and receiving. And a lot of the practices of generosity help us to see that giving and receiving. And as when we'll get to gratitude, a lot of the gratitude is just recognizing what we've received. And you see, so generosity and gratitude can go together quite a lot, because it can be gratitude for what I have received from others, from life, and so forth. From the Buddha, these five are a person of integrity's gifts. Which five? A person of integrity gives a gift with a sense of conviction. A person of integrity gives a gift attentively. A person of integrity gives a gift in season. So it's always, the Buddha's always, remember, he's always saying, make sure your timing's good for your gifts, right? You remember that when I've talked sometimes about wise speech here, that one of the four aspects of skillful speech is having good timing. Really crucially. And so I love that. The Buddha was just always very practical, going around saying, how's your timing? How's your timing? How's your timing? Going to do this? How's your timing? Right? And so a person of integrity gives a gift in season. A person of integrity gives a gift with an empathic heart. Right? So there's a heart connection with generosity. A person of integrity gives a gift without adversely affecting himself or others. Don't hear that so much, do you, in terms of generosity? So generosity can't be something where I give and it has a negative impact on me, which isn't the same thing as being willing to sacrifice something. So there's a area of discernment there as to what that means. But I found that very interesting, that generosity is not something that we do, or we might come up, should I give here? And we, to look at what the impact on oneself is, not being selfish. In this case, it's actually being discerning and wise. And lastly, let me say that the sense of generosity is that in the text it said that generosity is an adornment of our being. It said it sometimes that generosity is an ornament of the mind, which is interesting. So it, in a sense, it comes very naturally from our being when we're mature. When we're not so mature, we practice and we listen to talks on generosity or give talks in order to learn more myself about generosity, right? So very interesting. And again, the aim of generosity in the sense of practice is to cut through greed and cut through greed and self-centeredness. And so taking on generosity as a practice can really cut through that sense of greed. And I like to talk about the time that I've explored greed the most, in the most focused way, which was when Diana Winston and I taught a class on greed management. I remember when it was, because we had our final exam for the class was at the El Cerrito Bed Bath and Beyond, which was newly opened, and we did 30 minutes of silent walking meditation through Bed Bath and Beyond, and noticed greed arising. And we had very low enrollment for our class. To be precise, we had two teachers and five students. But Diana and I were very excited about the topic, so we didn't care. And the five people were very enthusiastic. So I remember that what we found, what I got really clear about in doing the class, because we really looked at greed for 5 weeks together, you know, and could do that here. Could talk about greed next week. Are you greedy for that topic? But what we found was that when we looked carefully at greed, we found it had certain qualities, and this is what is really worked through and dispelled in the long run by generosity. We found that greed was, and this would not be surprising, greed is self-centered, often to the extent that other people's needs don't even show up on the map. When there's greed, other people's needs don't matter. There's also often a sense of being so caught up with the impulse that we have no consciousness of consequences. So that makes some sense of a certain dominant economic system, you know, which often operates with greed. You know, I remember I make clippings, maybe you do too, from the newspapers, but I do it especially for talks. I remember making a clipping about from Wall Street traders in a really difficult time when there was an economic downturn. And the one of the Wall Street traders said, you know, here it's either greed or fear. Right now we're in a fear cycle, which is interesting, right? You know, what is that again? I don't know. I mean, the Buddha didn't talk a whole lot about economic systems, but it's interesting, like the dominance would be either, in Buddhist terms, what we call grasping, or that kind of strong aversion of fear. Right? So it's interesting. Okay. That may be another topic, another time. And so we work with generosity practice, we would work very directly with that sense of when do I become greedy? When do I just focus on me, excluding others, excluding consequences, and so forth? So that's really what generosity works with. So to do this as a practice, we could do it in all sorts of ways. You know, one thing I have found really helpful is just to take it as an intention every morning and to be generous. I found that there's actually a deep generosity just of our practice. You know, and I was thinking about this topic a lot as I was traveling about 10 days ago, and I was coming through the airport thinking about generosity, and there were, you know, I remember there was one instance, someone was walking a few feet in front of me and clearly wasn't so clear initially, but was confused, stopped really suddenly, such that I almost would have walked into the person, and I could have had the what Winnie the Pooh called harumph moment, you know, or, you know, and because I was thinking about generosity, I went somewhere else. I said, okay, I can have room for that, right? That's a small moment of generosity. I found it really translates very well into driving. Right, like there's a generosity of actually not being reactive. It's huge. It's a very ordinary form of generosity. Of course, there are beautiful forms of generosity where we support others on this larger scale, like we heard about earlier, and in which we have major ways of giving to people in need, right, in our own circles and so forth. But so we could just have the intention each morning, let me be guided by generosity for this week, and see where that goes, and go out and have that surface while driving, or when something comes up, or someone is a little short-tempered, or someone judges you, and generosity can be there, or just see where it goes, you know, to really be guided by that. There are a lot of other forms of generosity practice we can offer. I don't know, carry around $40 that you're going to give away on a given day, or whatever the appropriate amount is, you know, and carry it and just offer it, you know, and it actually can be very interesting to do that as an experiment. You know, they did a research project once where they gave people $50 to either spend on themselves, they gave like a one group $50 to spend on yourself and the other group $50 to give away. And then they had ways of determining who was happier at the end of the experiment. Guess who was happier? I think they're both fairly happy. But the ones who gave the money away were clearly happier. And so we can see what we're drawn to as a way of being generous and take that on as a practice. And there's this related practice of gratitude, which is very beautiful. Again, it can be gratitude at knowing that I'm in the cycles where I receive and I give, that I'm in this process of life where there's give and take, giving and receiving. This is from Eugene O'Neill talking about gratitude, and particularly gratitude in relationship, in this case, to the earth. He says, "For a moment, I lost myself. Actually, I lost my life. I was set free. I dissolved in the high, dim-starred sky. I belonged without past or future, within peace and unity and a wild joy with something greater than my own life, to life itself, to God, if you want to put it that way. For a second, you see the secret, and seeing the secret, you are the secret. For a second, there is meaning." So a sense of gratitude, just an opening to the nature of things. And for many, gratitude is a regular practice. You know, many of you probably know the monk David Steindl-Rast, a Catholic monk, who really has focused on gratitude and what he calls gratefulness much of his life. And he takes this to be the center, really, of the spiritual life. He says, "Gratitude springs from insight, a recognition of interdependence." Again, that sense that gratitude's related to generosity. "That something good has come to me from another person, that it is freely given to me. The moment this recognition dawns on me, gratitude spontaneously dawns in my heart. You can feel either grateful or alienated, but never both at the same time. Gratefulness drives out alienation. There is not room for both in the same heart. When you are grateful, you know that you belong to a network of give and take, and you say yes to that belonging." So a sense of gratitude. This is the Buddha had a lot of teaching on gratitude and on blessings. And this is the text that he gave called the Discourse on Blessings. "It is a great blessing to spend time in the company of wise people and to honor those who are worthy. To live in a place that is good for you, to do good deeds, and to keep yourself going in the right direction. To be well educated, to develop your skills, to train yourself in discipline, to use words carefully and beautifully." These are all qualities we can be grateful for. Take good care of your mother and father. To cherish your partner and children and to engage in a livelihood that is harmless. I think this has been somewhat updated for our time, this translation, because I don't think the Buddha said partner. But he would if he were alive. So to give generously to others, to live with integrity, to care for everyone you consider your family, to avoid doing harm, to be careful with intoxicants, and to develop wholesome states of mind. Again, he's saying it is a great blessing to be respectful, humble, content, and grateful, and to regularly bring teachings into your life, to be patient, open to learning, to be in touch with people on a spiritual path, to discuss spiritual teachings, to live simply and in a holy way, to understand the deepest truth, and to realize the highest freedom and happiness, to have a mind that is steady, unswayed by the ups and downs of life, free of sorrow and shame, at peace. Those who act in these ways cannot be dragged down. Everywhere they go, they find well-being." Another passage from the Buddha. These two people are hard to find in the world. Which two? The one who is first to do a kindness, and the one who is grateful and thankful for a kindness done. So gratitude is set in relation to kindness, and we can think of this from another person. We might also have a sense of the kindness of the earth or of life itself, right? It's not simply a person. And so we can be grateful for the earth, you know, and one practice that, you know, that can really help with gratitude is just a slowing down and actually being with a tree or being with the sky. There's something about gratitude which is out of that busyness, right? The busyness of the mind or the busyness of always being pulled by the future, and just actually staying with something for a short time. So one wonderful practice is just to actually be with an object. You know, like I can be with this pen and be grateful for the pen as a practice. Or I can be grateful for the bell. And we don't actually cultivate this so much. In Zen, this is often cultivated. One bows to one's cushion, and you bow to your meal that you eat. And I think that's really bringing out that sense of gratitude. So I can go out and be grateful for the sky. I can be grateful to my car. I can be grateful for all sorts of things. I can slow down, be grateful for this recording, for this recorder, for the water, and so forth. And that's one way of practicing. It's really to slow down, maybe just periodically stop and do that for 10 seconds, right? That's one way to practice. Or another way that I practice often, I typically do this 4 times a day, I often repeat a kind of a vow, which takes 2 or 3 or 4 minutes, which I sometimes say here, but in the middle of it, I just invite gratitude for whatever comes to mind in the moment to be there. It's another way to practice gratitude, just to say, what am I grateful for right now? You know, and so we can be grateful. We can be grateful for the, you know, for the earth, for the bounty of nature. We can be grateful for beauty. And this is from, you know, the native people. There is often this tremendous gratitude for beauty that we find. This is a chant from the Navajo. Walk with dignity. With beauty may I walk. With beauty before me may I walk. With beauty behind me may I walk. With beauty above me may I walk. With beauty all around me may I walk. In old age, wandering on a trail of beauty, lively may I walk. You hear that? In old age, wandering on a trail of beauty, lively may I walk. There's a wonderful poem by Gary Snyder, very much in that spirit, called Prayer for the Great Family. Gratitude to Mother Earth, sailing through night and day, and to her soil, rich, rare, and sweet, in our minds, so be it. Gratitude to plants, the sun-facing, light-changing leaf and fine root hair, standing still through wind and rain, their dances in the flowering spiral grain, in our minds, so be it. Gratitude to air, bearing the soaring, swift, and silent owl at dawn, breath of our song, clear spirit, breeze in our minds, so be it. Gratitude to wild beings, our brothers teaching secrets, freedoms, and ways, who share with us their milk, self-complete, brave and aware in our minds, so be it. Gratitude to water, clouds, lakes, rivers, glaciers, holding or releasing, streaming through all our body, salty seas in our minds, so be it. Gratitude to the sun, blinding, pulsing light through trunks of trees, through mist-warming caves where bears and snakes sleep. He who wakes us in our minds, so be it. Gratitude to the great sky who holds billions of stars and goes yet beyond that, beyond all powers and thoughts, and yet is within us. Grandfather space, the mind is his wife, so be it. So what would it be like to read that poem every day? Or be with that energy? So we can be grateful to the earth, We can be grateful for our families, for our ancestors, for our communities. We can be grateful for so many aspects of the human family. Grateful for our teachers, grateful for our mentors, grateful for this practice. You know, this practice of cultivating wisdom and compassion is amazing. These practices have not been available as they are now until a very short time ago. If you were living in, let's say, in Western cultures, for most of the last 1,000 years, something like this would have rarely been accessible. And they are there for us. We can have gratitude towards that. So you see, gratitude is really about almost like stopping, not taking things for granted, and opening up the heart to feel that there is indeed gratitude. Gratitude is very, very good medicine if any of us have tendencies to be judgmental. I've talked about judgments a few times here, so you may have worked out all those issues. But it actually is a wonderful practice, and doing one of the practices that I'm talking about, or maybe ones that you know, 5 or 10 minutes a day will really help if we have tendencies to be overly critical, overly aversive, judgmental. It's to train us really to tune into what's positive and to be able to do that, to really have that capacity more and more. Another way to practice gratitude is to compile a list of what I'm grateful for. And for a period of, I think, about 1.5 years, I did that, some practice like that, just 10 minutes. I had a list of maybe 10 or 12 things. I wrote them down. I looked at the list every morning at the end of my meditation period for 10 minutes. And it made a difference, right? And I'd just reflect on them. I'd look at my list and reflect like that. And so, the gratitude practice can really help us to tune in. It is, again, wonderful as an antidote. It helps us. We may have a habit that we've developed for hundreds or thousands or millions of hours of tuning in to the negative. I think my conditioning was to tune in to problems, right? And to tune in, and that has its value, obviously. And one thing I should report is that doing a fair amount of gratitude practice can leave your critical thinking skills totally intact. But I think it gives balance. Actually, if you have a lot of gratitude, I think you can actually be more skillful in talking about what the problem is. So it's not at all to get in the way of that, to seeing where there are issues or where there are problems. You know, and in fact, talking about it that way points to how gratitude is a practice, and we can have different kinds of distortions for the practice. You could think of, if I want to cultivate gratitude, what would be some ways that there could be problems or distortions? One would be that I would use it as a way not to look at problems, right? I would actually use it to cover over, to just look at the positive. That would be a distortion, right? Another way that there might be a problem is if I sort of don't have a genuine gratitude, but try to express gratitude because I think it's going to look good for certain people, right? You know, and we could also think that there could be other kinds of distortions of gratitude where it's not sincere, or I'm somehow making believe, or not really tuning in a way to the heart, or letting it, again, cover over problems, or use it as an excuse not to deal with certain issues. So, again, gratitude as a practice would have to work through all of those. Ultimately, there can be a sense in which there can be gratitude even for the difficulties in our life. And I think probably we have had challenging times where we later say, in a way, I'm grateful for that difficulty, or that really hard time, or that ordeal, because I learned something. I came through something that I wouldn't have learned otherwise. There's a line that I like from Shantideva from the 8th century, where he's talking about being with difficult people. And he says, just like treasure appearing unexpectedly in my own home, I should be grateful to have a difficult person, for that difficult person helps me with my journey of awakening. So you can have it. This is advanced practice, is gratitude, gratitude for difficulties. This is from Hafiz, a Sufi poet. I had to seek the physician because of the pain this world caused me. I could not believe what happened when I got there. I found my teacher. Before I left, he said, up for a little more homework? Okay, I replied. Well then, try thanking all the people who have caused you pain. They helped you come to me. Advanced practice? But it can be, we can look at it that way. There's a beautiful story that maybe some of you know that was in, maybe it was in this book by Rachel Naomi Remen called Kitchen Table Wisdom. Probably some of you know this book, very beautiful book of stories. And this was a story of a young man in his 20s who developed a form of cancer and had to have his leg amputated. And he had been an athlete, very physically active. And he was working with Rachel, and she was at times working with art. And he was asked to do a drawing of his state at that time. And he drew a picture of a vase that was kind of dark and it had a jagged crack going through it. And so he just saw himself as a cracked vessel. And that was it. And he kept on staying with her and practicing. And he actually became very interested in working with other people in that particular center who were going through really difficult medical experiences. You know, and in fact, one woman that he started working with had come from a family where breast cancer was very common, and she lost a breast, and she was also in her 20s, and she was in a very severe depression. And he was working with her one day, and he couldn't get through to anything, so he took off his own leg brace and just started jumping around on one leg. And something just connected with her, and she started laughing because it looked so funny. He was just jumping around the whole time, like for a few minutes. And actually, they later got married. And then a short time later, maybe about a year after his initial loss, he was at a place where he was finishing his work with Rachel. And he was asked to look at the original drawing. And he said, she's asked him, do you want to change anything? Is there any way that you need to finish the drawing? He looked at it for a while, and he said yes. And he got some, I guess, crayons, and he started using a yellow crayon and producing what looked like rays of light around the crack. And then she said, well, she asked him, well, what does that mean? He said, the cracks are where the light comes in. And that was his gratitude. And really seeing that the wounds, the difficulties were potential places for learning. So again, that's a profound gratitude, even for the difficulties, you know. And I was just looking in the last week, someone I know is dying. And he expressed tremendous gratitude. At the same time that he says this dying process is kind of strange, He wrote a communication to be read by people, and he said, I am at this Thanksgiving, I am incredibly grateful for so many things. And he could say that as he was dying. He was dying young. And so the gratitude can be there with the difficulties. Ultimately, it can be an attitude that is accessible. Again, not as a way to suppress what's difficult or to be with it, but it can be an attitude that I think is actually part of really being awake. that there's a sense that that quality of awakeness can come with a quality of the heart that in a sense is grateful no matter what else is happening. You find this in many teachers and writers. And I think I'll just close with another expression of gratitude also from Sufi tradition, our friend Mr. Rumi. And this is a poem that I think many of you know, but I'll close with this. This is The Guest House, which is also about gratitude. This being human is a guest house. Each morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whomever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So my invitation will be to see if you feel called to practice either generosity or gratitude or both, and to, again, maybe have a sense of what gratitude practice might look like, what generosity practice might look like. A lot of other forms of gratitude practice. You can find a friend and send an email each day about what you're grateful for with another person, or call up someone and express that gratitude. Yeah. Let me stop here and make time for any discussion, reflections, questions, sharing of other ways to practice generosity and gratitude. Please.
I just want to say a friend and I did that for, I bet, a couple of years. Every day we would email each other for something we were grateful for.
Yeah.
And it was a lovely practice.
Yeah.
A lovely practice.
Yeah. Very, very simple practice. But just to go into that place, again, I think it can be just tremendously helpful for not getting quite so stuck in the aversive tendencies. Does anyone still get stuck in aversion at times? About 10% of the group raise their hands. And so I think that's what I found for myself. Again, I think my own conditioning was to just have, you know, as we would say, those neural pathways that go quickly to seeing what's wrong, problem, criticism, judgmental mind, were very worked out initially. And again, there's some value there. I mean, just to see problems, be able to fix them, and so forth. But I didn't so much go to just be with the positive. That was not, was not just where I went for various reasons. And so the practice just, it builds a different muscle. And to do it every day is really, really helpful. And I think it can have a big impact. I don't think if we do it just in that moment, we get unstuck from wherever we were. And I think gratitude is also a slowing down of the momentum of our thinking and just the momentum of daily life. Right?
Well, it was also nice to start something, to start a day.
Yeah.
Because we did it first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
To start the day with something positive.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just sort of set the tone for at least the next 5 minutes.
Please. Yeah. Why don't we say our names also?
My name's Katie. I have a friend who's in her middle 90s and has gone through a lot of difficult things. And her tradition is different from this one, but she wakes up every day. She told me recently, she said, "This is the day the Lord has made. Let us be glad and rejoice in it."
Mm.
That, to me, that's the kind of gratitude that I grew up practicing regularly, but not quite like this.
Let us be glad and rejoice in the day. So that could really direct the attention to gratitude, right? Rejoicing, yeah. Beautiful. Thank you, Katie. Please.
My name is Jerome, and in my evening meditation and morning meditation, right after I settle in, I think of three things that I'm grateful for for that day. And the next morning, I repeat what I did for the previous day because I didn't have anything new yet because I'm still fresh in the morning. And I've been doing this for about 2 years now, and it's really been a wonderful practice.
Wonderful, yeah. So repeating three things in the evening and then often the same three in the morning. And just really having that as a way to tune in. Yeah, wonderful at the end of the day. And I didn't talk about all the research on gratitude. You know, there's a lot of research. In fact, the leading researcher on gratitude is at UC Davis, a man named Robert Emmons. He's written several books on gratitude. And let me see where my clipping is. But gratitude can help one's health. Let me see. A little bit on the research. People who do have a daily gratitude practice exercise more. It's a correlation. I don't know if it's causality, but there is a correlation. They have fewer symptoms of illness, and they feel better about their lives. People who keep gratitude lists are more likely to have made progress towards important personal goals. Young adults who do gratitude practices have higher levels of alertness, enthusiasm, determination, attentiveness, and energy. In a sample of people with a neuromuscular disease, a 21-day gratitude practice actually resulted in greater amounts of high energy, positive moods, a greater sense of being connected with each other, more optimistic sense of their own life, and better sleep duration and sleep quality.
Wow.
So, and there are other experiments which really can be correlated that gratitude actually helps with health and sort of, and again, it's not mysterious, right? If gratitude has the power sometimes to take one out of being locked into more negative thinking or negative storylines, which it does. Children who practice grateful thinking have more positive attitudes towards school and their families. Okay, that could be a little tricky. Okay, please. Yeah. And then in the back, please.
My name's Linda. For about the last year or so, I've been trying to set as an intention generosity.
Yeah.
I was raised in a religion that gave lip service, I would say, to kindness and generosity, but I never was really taught it much at all.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've been trying to do is just notice when people are generous and, you know, kind of bow to that.
Yeah.
And then, because as you notice it, you see it more. And I bow also to Art and Philip because their generosity kindles in me a sense of, you know, maybe that's possible for me to do too.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. So there is really that. The generosity practice, you know, then that's where it really connects with the mindfulness and the wisdom practice, that when we actually tune into generosity, we tune into impulses in ourselves, but also seeing it in others. And again, there's something about it really slows things down and brings it to another level. And then there's that sense of, you know, what is it like to live in a community or be in a community that where there's a lot of generosity? It's very, very, it's very contagious, very beautiful, you know. And some, you know, again, I was once at a potlatch ceremony with native peoples up in British Columbia. Potlatch is where you give gifts for, in this case, for 3 days in a row, for about 10 or 12 hours a day. Everyone was receiving gifts over and over again. You know, that's the nature, and they do that. And the Christian missionaries didn't like it originally. They thought that people were trying to show off with their giving. And they actually got it outlawed in Canada. Some of you probably know that. It was outlawed until 1951, the gift-giving ceremony. The history there. But it was a very contagious sense, much like you're saying, like You know, there's something that just is, if other people are giving, I mean, we probably could feel it as Art was speaking. If someone else is willing to do that, it like opens up, well, might I be willing to do that, right? And it's not to have competitive giving, right? You know, and of course that might be part of it, you have to see that, but it tends to open up something very beautiful, which is what I hear you're saying. Yeah. Please, it might be the last one, I think. Yeah.
Well, so along those same lines, I think, you talk about generosity, when you start thinking deeply about the nature.
Okay, a little louder.
To think deeply about the nature of generosity and its roots. And so I don't know that I'm right about the etymology, but it doesn't matter because I like it.
Yeah.
It feels connected to birth and to beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all of the beginning, and so it takes me into this sense of it's the beginning of everything. And you said it is the first thing.
Yeah.
But it's the beginning. All that can come from generosity in us and in the recipient.
Yes, you may have just sensed that intuitively, but actually from an etymological point of view, at least in the Western languages, that's correct. That generosity is related to words like generate. And even it's even related to genius, has something to do with a sense of generativity, creativity, and begetting, actually. Something coming from a source, as a genius is closer to the source of things. And so both something that's generative, but also generative both in the sense of generating creatively out of nothing, but also being a value to others. That two senses of being generative. So that's actually in the etymology for generosity. The etymology for gratitude is related to words meaning thank you, thanks. Mm-hmm. You know, words like, I think like gratuity also, like something like, that's probably the deeper meaning of a tip, is that we give thanks, right? It's a way of giving thanks. It's related etymologically to those same words. You know. Yeah. So, very beautiful states. How many of you would be interested in having the intention to really focus on this in the next week? Okay, great. That's great. So we'll at the end we'll have a little right when we're finishing. We'll have a moment of setting intention. I think we had Art had something that he wanted to share now, and then we also have the meta cards.